Welcome to Project Chatter, the podcast where PPM experts from various sectors talk about the latest trends. Listen to Val and Dale as they talk about tried and tested best practices and share their unfiltered thoughts about the industry. Whether you're here to learn how to progress your career, improve your project control skills, or just want to hear an Aussie and South African rant about projects, then you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Project Chatter podcast with your hosts, Dale Fung and Val Matthews.
In this week's pod, we were rejoined by Micah Pippo to discuss the subtle art of project planning. Micah has spent the last 14 years in project controls. While he's performed a wide variety of roles, his passion and main focus is planning and scheduling. During his careers, he's tore down nuclear facilities, built large ferries, built data centers all over the world, and more recently is helping Intel deliver state-of-the-art fab capabilities. Micah is the founder of the and the host of Beyond Deadlines.
Yeah, we had an amazing conversation with Micah. Second time back, which was great as well, because we missed the first time, Val. But I'm glad you made it back for this one, because you've been missing always as well. But we delved back into planning and scheduling, which we haven't done in quite some time. So I think, you know, getting not back to basics, but sort of getting back into one of the core skill sets in project controls and PMO and project management is really good. And Micah shares some really, really good insights. Martin, what were the key things for you?
Yeah, it's really fascinating to get his insights on stuff around what makes a good planner, particularly around changing careers and just making a move between industries. And we talked about if there's any geographical factors in that, which I found really interesting. There's a good chat at the end about how technology will change some of the collaboration between project teams. How about you, Val? What were your main takeaways?
Nothing really. I thought it was pretty ordinary. No, just joking. It was great. It's good to hear someone with a passion about planning and the profession again. I think we said he was a one-man band, but that's how it starts. But I think, you know, we need to amplify the importance of planning on roles, and that even with technology, it's going to enhance, not replace. And I think Micah had some really good points there.
Yeah, absolutely. We even delve into how you can increase your earnings and also what the best approach is to sharpening the saw when it comes to educating and training yourself. But anyway, folks, we'll leave it there. We won't go on too much. As we say, keep listening, keep liking, and keep paying it forward.
Hello, project people. Welcome back to a brand new episode of the Project Chatter podcast. And yes, I'm back. I'm here and I'm alive. Dale, how are you, sir?
I'm all the better for seeing you, Val. Where the have you been?
Man, don't even. Oh, we should shout out though. You will be able to see Dale and I speaking at some expo soon. So we'll give you a little drop of that very, very quickly. Martin, how are you, sir?
Yep, very good. And yourself?
I can't complain, sir. I cannot complain. The kids are back to school and everything feels okay right now. I think we had some technical difficulties before, so hopefully my internet doesn't screw up this podcast because it's done it a few times. But let's welcome a guest, an old guest, a new guest, a shiny guest. One of our favorite guests, Mr. Micah. How are you?
Doing well. I feel a good chunk of your audience heard your voice, Val, and immediately ended this podcast. So,
well, fast forwarded.
If you're still listening, please stay there for me.
That's when you speed up the podcast. You're like, Jesus, this could pass this advert. But it's good to have you back, Micah.
It's only a 15-second skip.
Exactly. And I'm not promoting anything at the moment. So, but it's good to see you because we've not, and we were talking about this before we pressed record about scheduling and planning. We don't really do much in that space in terms of really getting into the detail. But before we do, man, what's happening in the world of planning from your perspective, Micah?
What's happening in the world of planning? I mean, there's a lot. I mean, there's obviously a ton of mega projects kicking off. And with the advent of loads more technologies on the software and hardware side, you're just seeing massive things change. And you still have some great foundational stuff there as well. You know, but for me, still working at Intel, doing planning and scheduling. For people who didn't catch the first episode before that, I was at Google where I helped build the planning and scheduling systems for their global data center delivery program. And then on the side, me and Greg Lawton have kicked off the Beyond Deadlines podcast and newsletters where we just dive into planning and scheduling. So if you're listening to this podcast and you're just really tired of general project management, come join us at Beyond Deadlines, where we focus solely on planning and scheduling.
I love that you guys focus solely on one craft, because we are here, we're everywhere, right? But I think the scheduling and planning in, you know, craft and profession needed somewhere to go where there was a little bit of a different tact, a little bit more detail, went under the covers a bit more. And you got such street cred as well, Micah, which you were very, very humble about. But I think that helps us set the plateaus for, like, what exactly is planning and how do you navigate this in a modern environment? Because I think a lot of people are thinking, I think you had Chirag on before, talking about planning and roles. And I don't know what's happening in the UK and the US, but in Australia, you know, roles are changing. They're kind of evolving. There's an emergence of different and new and exciting roles. Obviously, we've heard a lot about AI because there's another podcast for that. I'll do a shout out later. But what are we doing in terms of enhancing planning and scheduling? You know, we talk about this being the subtle art, and I think it's actually one of the most primary functions of a project team. Do you feel like planners get the credit they deserve? Are they still treated like, you know, sometimes, and I'm not sure if Google has the same thing, but certainly in construction projects, are they treated like someone you can ignore, maybe like an auntie or an uncle, you know, who has some good advice, be like, yeah, I don't really need to take it. What's your perspective on the respect of the actual profession of planning?
Yeah, that's a great question. Probably a little biased in it because I am a planner and scheduler. And I might flip your analogy around a little bit, you know, of like an auntie and uncle that can ignore it. It's more like you have a set of children who ignore, you know, hey, don't touch the stove, and you touch the stove again. And my analogy is backed up with data, because there's so many projects that are delivered late and over budget and have problems with quality and scope that we obviously aren't focusing enough on the craft of planning and scheduling. We'll probably get into this more, but yeah, there's some nuances and lingo between what's a planner, what's a scheduler, the different levels of planning and scheduling. You know, you have high level capital planning all the way down to production style infield control. So yeah, there's this entire broad scope of what people would call planning and scheduling. But overall, I think we're still missing the mark on it. And we won't go super far in the details, but like I mentioned on the last show, you can get a college degree to become a project manager. You can get a college degree to become a quantity surveyor. You still can't get a college degree to become a planner and scheduler.
It's amazing.
On most projects these days, you walk in the door, you're going to find 35 project managers and like two planners and schedulers. And so I just look at it as the magic golden triangle that is, what is it? Cost, time, and scope. And you have a triangle that's overinflated on the cost and scope side and not enough resources on the time side. And I think that's a lot of, if you want to talk just overall issues, that's where a lot of the focus in my mind is.
Yeah. And I think because of that, you've kind of narrowed or you've bottlenecked the opportunity for people to kind of get into the field of planning, because you guys, you and Greg, and obviously us on the call today, we all are very keen for more people to enter the job market, right? We want more people on projects, yeah, you know, more diversity. But 90% of the time, and I'll be honest, it's the only planners I really get that are fantastic are Indian or from Iran. And I'm thinking, well, what are they doing differently that we're not doing here in Australia or the US or the UK to open that job market up to others? And part of the reason is it's not actually a vocation as such. It's not recognized as its own kind of independent career path. Is that your perspective as well, Micah?
Yeah, I think there's great planners and schedulers from everywhere, but the best ones have a strong balance of technical skill in multiple areas. So the actual what you're building technical skill, the technical skill of planning and scheduling, and then the last part are the soft skills, because planning and scheduling is very much a series of negotiations, and you need to be able to communicate well and discuss with others. And you know, it's just a whole package that gets missed. And if everyone is just falling into this career, I mean, before I was a planner and scheduler, I was doing credit collections. I was calling companies up and asking them for money. And turns out I'm not great at doing that. I'm a total pushover, and I would never be able to be like, you know, you know, Micah Four Fingers who's going to come get your money. Because I'd be like, oh, you don't want to pay me? You know what? That's okay. Maybe we'll get it next week. I just could not do that job. And then I fell into the project controls world and fell into scheduling. If that's the talent pool you're drawing from, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just going to be harder to find talented people, you know, and it's the overall, you know, ball of education and planning and scheduling and capability is just going to roll slower, you know, because you don't have people at universities doing white papers on planning and scheduling. You don't have dedicated career paths. You have a couple certificates that anybody can go pass and move on with their lives, and there's no real set standard. So it's just one of those things that it's going to lag for a while, but I feel that eventually technology is going to help us jump over some of these hurdles, and maybe the overall industry will get a boost. But I mean, just a real quick shout out. If you are a project engineer, a project manager in cost controls, you don't like what you're doing, go check out planning and scheduling. Amazing, amazing pay. There's not as much competition in planning and scheduling just for the sheer fact of the stuff we talked about. So yeah, I mean, shout out to anybody who wants to join the ranks.
Yeah, you're quite right on that point. I mean, if you compared probably all the, let's call it the PMO, project controls professions within that cluster, risk, change, etc., planners by a mile are paid so much better. They generally have, I would say, also a bit of a direct connection to senior executives as well. They seem to be, especially if they're good, right? If you know what you're doing, they have a special spot in the place of the executive table, and you're highly respected and regarded across the project. Because one thing that's very difficult, and maybe it's why a lot of people don't do it, it is a hard job. I wouldn't say it's an easy job if you're really engrossed in it. You kind of touched on a few things, Micah, around the skill sets that you might need to have, because it's you need to kind of be technical. You need to understand kind of how to dimensionally visualize what this thing might look like in the future. You need to be analytical and really probably have some level of attention to detail. But you also need to communicate, which is a completely flip on that. It's just like this soft skill that needs to complement the technical skill. Do you feel like, what do you would say to the people out there, like you said, if they're interested in this type of role, the kind of top skills to be a good planner would be?
I mean, you just named them. So just click back two buttons.
Thanks,
I don't have much to add to that, Val. You kind of took the answer out of the question.
What are you going to say, Val? You're completely incorrect. What you really need is... And
yeah, it kind of felt like I was on In Jeopardy. I was like, what is this, a planner?
Yeah. Who is Val Matthews? Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, the everything you named there. And like, it's just interest to me. The final cherry on top to that would be just interest in the job. Like, are you interested in planning and scheduling? Does that bring passion to your life? Do you feel fulfilled with it? Does it bring any energy to you? Because if you're happy and you're energetic about something, you're just going to want to do it. And so that's why I kind of brought up earlier, if you are unhappy, why don't you go find something that makes you happy, and planning and scheduling could be that piece. That's the only thing I'd add. I mean, you're totally right. You know, you can join a company, a medium-sized company at a lower level on-site job scheduler. It's fairly easy to pick up Primavera P6 and some of these other planning and scheduling tools. You can add lean production planning under your tool belt so you can command rooms of superintendents. And then after that, you can look at shooting up the ladder. And that's where you can plan out a company's set of projects. So you start getting more into the full planner role as opposed to the scheduler role. And you can start looking at large-scale capital planning multiple projects, running a front-end planning operation of, you know, 30, 40 data centers or whatever it is. But it's just, there's so much variety in that. I mean, we still haven't talked about risk. So you can transfer over and be a risk analyst. We haven't talked about claims and delay claims analysis. I mean, there's a whole wide world of like roles within roles once you get in there that I just, people need to be aware about.
Yeah, that's right. Even within the, as you just unpacked, within planning, there's these other kind of specializations, if you like. You know, you can go really broad and you can be at portfolio and executive levels for multiple programs or projects, multinational projects, or you could be very specific. You could be doing works plans or on-site plans or engineers plans or possessions. And I find that's really interesting too, depending on what works for you. one of the things you mentioned just before that, if we go a few clicks back as well, Mike, you mentioned about, you know, the evidence is that projects just aren't delivering on time, on budget, whatever the triangle may be for you. And that might be because of a lack of presence of planning or respect of the planning profession. But also I think there's a lack of like planning experience that's kind of risen to the top in effect, because you don't see a lot of executives who come from the planning background. They generally come from like a, maybe an engineering background or a finance background. I would love this, by the way. So this is a vision for 25 and beyond, is to see some people from project controls and planning, you know, hitting into executive fields, because they'll have a different engagement tactic for commercials and for other things that impact and influence projects. You know, what's your view on that?
I'd love to see it as well too. You brought up, I'm literally working on an article right now that it's if a scheduler was a CEO. Shout out to the Beyond Deadlines newsletter. Come subscribe. Yeah. We write great stuff. But I was literally unpacking that. Like, what if a CEO was a scheduler, what would they, or planner scheduler? Folks, I'm from America. I'm going to say scheduler and planner interchangeably. I really don't want to offend anyone. So if you're offended, I apologize. Yeah. Maybe you can redub scheduler or planner every time I say it and then put out an American version and a Europe version or something. I don't know.
But I'm sure that.
Yeah, get the AI on it. It'll work. But I thought that at first, what people don't fully realize is there are these business cycles that are going on in the background of companies. And it's essentially what it is usually a demand. So in the data center, the demand is customers want to watch cat videos in Switzerland. So enough customers rise up in Switzerland to watch those cat videos, and boom, we need to build a data center in Switzerland. You know, if it's chips, you're meeting a customer need. If it's like even like Neo, like they have a targeted date they want to open to fulfill people coming in, spending money. And so that's a demand, and that's going to be a date selected. And the first thing that I think a CEO that is a scheduler would understand is that maybe don't pick the date purely off of demand, because that's what always happens. And that's literally why every single project is always late. That date they pick is based off of, I need to open the airport by this time to catch this many people because the other airport needs to shut down. I need to build the data center by this time because all the people in Switzerland are watching cat videos. It's not based on maybe this is when our first target is. And now we've gone back and looked at our benchmarking. We've done backwards passes and we validated that this is the actual range we hit our projects in, no matter what. So if you only hit 50% of your projects on time, and maybe your standard deviation is, I don't know, 20, 30%, whatever that demand point you hit, either you needed to go do a way bigger backwards pass on, or you need to move it forward. Like that would be primary number one if you saw someone in the C-suite starting to think about that kind of risk analysis, how these actually work. Because most of the time, executives just Q2 2026.
Yeah.
Get the ribbon cutting. I hope to see you there. It's like, and it just doesn't pan out that way. You know what I mean? And then the other thing too is the culture that I think would be driven would be different. And it would be much more planning focused. It'd be much more, you know, in the book, how big things get done, much more in the, hey, we're going to stay in the design phase. We're going to stay in the planning phase until we have this figured out. And then once we have this figured out, we are going to move forward. There's way too much design done in parallel these days. And it's done because the date picked was trash. Now we got to rush and go do it. So let's just figure this out as we go. You know, and then you start making suboptimal decisions and you lose a lot of leverage. You know, you start losing the ability to do offsite OSM, offsite manufacturing and prefabrication. You lose contracting leverage. You can't go to lump sum because you're still designing it. You know, nothing quite like buying out a package you don't know what's in. Yeah, there's probably not going to be a change order there. And so, yeah, I think those are probably the two big things that I probably could riff on this for hours, but those are probably the two big things I see that planner, scheduler, CEO would do radically different.
That's a massive one. The whole, I never got this, right? From bid to kind of execution or mobilization, you kind of had this fluffy period of time, but you're planning, but then all the key dates are set and you're like, wait a second, how does that work? Well, what's the purpose of planning then if the contractual milestones are already set? And So you end up in this kind of, you're already chasing your tail before you even start kind of business. But what you said there was brilliant. If we could do that, it would be great. It would empower, in fact, it might solve a lot of problems of projects and delays and all sorts of things if we just didn't move past the gate until the gate was done, you know, the definition of done. Back to those old rudimentary fundamentals. Oh, God. I could go on for hours for that, but I'm going to get Dale in this because I know he's chewing at the bit. Dale, what do you think?
I think it's great. I actually want to add to what Mike is saying because to our points earlier, not only in this podcast, but previously on planners and schedulers, you know, I think one of the best things, or one of the things that make planners the best planners is also communication skills and stakeholder management. And how often do you get CEOs or MDs that actually can't communicate to the organization? You know, they might have a great plan, but it's in their head and they can't share that vision accurately or articulate it. And those communication skills that come with being a fantastic planner slash scheduler, if you're in the US, you know, that carries with you. And there's so many other facets that we can add to this because we know, and as you say, Micah, we might be biased on this episode, on this podcast. But what are the, I guess, if we did have to be devil's advocate, what do you think planners or schedulers would lack going into that CEO role that, you know, because if we are now promoting and advocating that we should be quite senior in organizations, where should they sharpen the saw?
Yeah, that's good. Good question. Probably on the how you build an organization, most planners and schedulers are probably going to lack. This is how you build up a team. This is how you set culture. If you're going up the ladder, I feel eventually you're going to cross the financial hurdle. That was what initially came to mind, was like, oh, probably financials. But as you start climbing up planning and scheduling, that's going to cross off your bucket list. I think that team building, that organization building, when you're going up the project manager ladder and you start getting into senior project manager, program manager, project director, the really good ones just can master building a team, building an org, building a culture, creating that shared vision that you see in organizations. That's probably would be the big ones that if most planners and schedulers, you know, you'll build your team, but you're probably not building that large of a team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess the other one to add in the mix is navigating bureaucracy and politics. Yeah. That's probably a big one as well. Although, arguably, there's plenty of politics within projects, no matter how small or large they are as well. So depending on how involved the planner slash schedule wants to get involved in them, because we know, we've said it on the pod before, you get P6 jockeys, right? Where they just sit on the desk and they're just in the software and they don't really get involved and, you know, to their detriment, I think. But I want to switch gears slightly because you mentioned a couple of times and I love watching how you've grown beyond deadlines, both the podcast and the newsletter. It's fantastic. And I think there's a lot of people that are benefiting from the content you're putting out there, both in audio, video, and written form. So thank you for that first and foremost. But one of the things I wanted to ask you with, you know, your focus on planning and scheduling, and yes, you do go a bit broader than that, but it centers on planning and scheduling. I want to know what are the sort of the key themes and feedback you're getting from your audience, your readers, because let's face it, we're just, I guess, a small sample of what, you know, we're seeing in the market. You know, at mass, it's those that are listening and feeding back to us. Is there anything specific that's currently going on where either they're really, really struggling in the planning scheduling space? And that could be anything from behaviors, cultures, all the way through to, damn it, I don't know how to do my critical path, or I don't believe it in it anymore because it's nonsense. What is it?
Now, it's been I think it's one of the coolest experiences of creating Beyond Deadlines is interacting with people around the globe. And I knew there was a lot of planners and schedulers out there, but I didn't realize how many planners and schedulers out there in the world. It's a huge, huge profession. And so being able to connect with just a broader base has really opened my eyes. The kind of standard questions I usually get are people who are outside of planning and scheduling, but in construction and want to transfer in. They listen to the podcast and this sounds great. How do I do it? I put out a free course that's on our newsletter and there's some YouTube videos on it on how to do that. So if you're interested in it, that's one of them. And I've helped some people transfer in. It's been really cool just to see someone get a job become a planner and scheduler, start growing. People in the profession, a lot of them are considering going back to school, getting a certificate, different sorts of training. And people reach out to me with questions like what kind of training I should get. And I'm always not, at this point in time, I'm not, it really comes down to the individual. But I would say in general, with most individuals I talk to, I probably wouldn't recommend going back to school unless there's something else in your mind. It's just a large dollar value expenditure for if you're already in construction doing a certain thing. I feel like if it's a money thing, you could figure out, and we can go down that rat hole in a second. And then the last one is just different sorts of scenarios and situations people are interested in. You know, beyond deadlines, we do a short interview format. We answer specific questions. And so we've had people reach out about, you know, how do you set culture? How do you work on different sorts of small projects? You know, what's the latest and greatest on visual based progressing? You know, is CPM dead? You know, it's just kind of a random spattering of questions. And so really overall, I mean, I think in whole, it's just provided me a lot more energy about the space, because prior to starting Beyond Deadlines and things like that, I was kind of like grinded down on this. I'm like, oh man, you know, another CPM review, like, let me go explain SPI and then let me explain why SPI isn't a great metric. But it's really just brought a whole new wave of energy into my life doing it. And well, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to jump in there because I think you mentioned two key things that a lot of people would like a bit more information on. And that is one, how to climb the career ladder, so to speak, or earn more money. And two, how to develop themselves. If it's not, you know, getting formal training, what is it? And there are many various ways, as you pointed out, to educating and developing yourself. Not least finding a fantastic mentor, perhaps, or finding someone that could really impart the knowledge onto you that you wouldn't find in formal settings, because let's face it, some of the best planners / schedulers are those that have worked through experience and understand context, and those things can't be replicated in a classroom. I mean, we've had guests previously talking about exactly that, learning in the classroom, and then Monday happens and you forget everything that you've learned. Just because you're back in the office in a different setting. So let's start there with training and development, because, you know, although you don't want to sort of be too specific, generally, and I know generalizations are tricky as well, but what advice would you give someone? And we want to ask you some tricky questions. What advice would you give someone to say, hey, look, you know, I want to sharpen the saw with scheduling. Where do I start? Or how do I approach it? Maybe that's a better question.
Yeah. Well, we got to kind of put a person out there. So let's just say this is a senior scheduler, planner scheduler. They've been in the game 5-6 years. They've kind of risen up the ranks, and now they're at the point where, you know, where do I go from here? You know, and because if someone's just starting or someone's later on, there's just a load of different ways you could go. But if that's the person we're talking about, and let's put them in oil and gas or data centers or just a larger industry, nothing too niche, not commercial. The advice I would give to them is, okay, Dale, Mr. Senior Scheduler, what do you want to do with your life? What do you need? And most often people say more money. That's what they'll say. They'll say, I want more money. I want to have a higher salary. You know, and then some of the other stuff will fall out. Okay, I want to be a manager. I want to maybe work on cooler jobs. I want to go work for a FANG company. But I would say a large percentage of the time, it's I want some more cash in my pocket. Cool. Appreciate that. Thank you. Okay. What companies and what jobs are you going to go work for that's going to get you more money? And have you researched them all? Have you looked at them? And then how much more money do you need? Do you need $1 million per year? Is it 20 grand, 30 grand, 40 grand? Because when I look through it that way, it might be much easier to just go find a new job at a better company, because a lot of people start with one company, they ride it out for 6 years, they've had salary compression, and they haven't stepped out and seen what they're worth in the market. When you just go get a new job, maybe you get a 30, 40, 50 grand kick up in your salary, happy days. You didn't have to study for the PMP. You didn't go back to school to get your MBA. You literally went on to ChatGPT, printed off a new resume, and party on.
Is that, so can I jump in there? Is that across all sectors, or are there specific sectors that pay more?
I would say most across all sectors. I feel like I don't have oil and gas experience. Like, I haven't personally worked for an oil and gas company, but from talking, that's more of a structured step up the ladder type segment. Some of the biggest money I've seen is in the tech sector, because you'll get paid just like a like programmer would, you know? But honestly, you know, in our newsletter, I think I'm at almost a year now where each week I go find three jobs on LinkedIn. I put them in our newsletter. I'm not connected with these jobs anyway, but lots of these jobs have their salary posting, and there's great money to be made. Any sector, any job, anywhere in the world, almost anywhere. Sometimes people reach out to me and they're from really small, weird places. And I'm like, you just got to move. Like, you got to go to a major metropolitan city. I can't help you out way where you are. Sorry.
And if we also delve on the other topic of training and development rather than, you know, sort of earning more, you were saying there sort of you don't have to go necessarily train and develop. What would your approach be to that in terms of, hey, look, there's new techniques, and we're probably, to Val's excitement, going to maybe delve into the tech side of things in the future of project planning as well, because let's face it, the landscape is changing with the tech out there. We all know some of the, you know, the advanced tech companies out there. We know the people behind them as well, and there's some fantastic things happening. Yet I feel very few planners or schedulers understand what's available. So how do you go about advising people on that?
Yeah, the first thing, and I totally didn't answer your last question. I just started talking about money. but the first thing that I usually tell people is go create something, go build something. If you have the foundations of project controls and project planning done, and you can go through them pretty quickly, you understand, you know, the basics of earned value management, you understand the basics of critical path management, you have a good foundation of lean and project planning. I'm sure I'm missing a couple, but you have what we would call like the base of project management. You know P6 pretty darn well. Then from there, go create something at this point. You know, go start experimenting. I posted an article where I created a database of 5,000 projects. I created my own program portfolio. And then I started running ChatGPT analysis on it. And then a couple months later, I realized, man, I wasted a whole lot of time creating that synthetic data when I could have just asked ChatGPT to do it for me. But I think to me, whatever you want to go learn, go try and build. And that'll be the best way to go figure it out. Because then you'll find mentors that are actually helping you solve a real problem that you want to go create. And you can either build stuff at work, if you have the opportunity, the space, and the freedom to, or you can build stuff on the side. I mean, you know, and when we start looking at technology on the planning and scheduling side, it's really, to me, just falling into two large buckets. Okay. You have the visual-based progress or visual capture, and then you have large-scale compute. And so that's all the AI assistants, the chatbots, the advanced analytics, the AI analytics. At some point in the future, these two roads are going to merge together into a holy utopia of wildness, I would say. But either of those buckets would be cool to go experiment in. I mean, you can get a free, I believe you still can. I'm pretty sure you can still get a free Google Cloud account and go build your own, photo processing model. What's the technical, I forget the technical term, but essentially you can just upload a bunch of photos that, and mark the ones that you think are incorrect, right? And then it'll tell you every time you take a photo, whether the photo's correct or not. So for an example would be, you know, you could do this. I'm trying to think of stuff around your house, but on a project site, you could do cable terminations, right? Cable terminations are constantly screwed up. They're constantly messed up. You could go take a bunch of photos of this is what a correct cable termination looks like. And then this is what a bunch of incorrect cable terminations look like. And you just mark them. And then you actually can create your own app, basically, where it would tell if, you know, the termination is correct, right? I'm trying to think of a good household example, but it's not coming to mind. And all I'm just thinking of is like my kids messing at my house. That's just not.
This episode is sponsored by Deltek, your gateway to peak project performance and profitability.
Deltek's world-class PPM solutions offer robust cost control, customizable workflows, scalable scheduling, and advanced risk analysis.
Trusted globally by thousands, Deltek drives your project success to new heights. Discover more at deltek.com.
Yeah, but I mean, that's to me. It would be like totally go create something. And then on the large-scale computing side, start diving into ChatGPT, start looking at, you know, large language models and large data sets, and just go experiment and create.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think you're right, build, and I'd add be curious as well. Like, don't just sort of settle for where you're at. But Machine Gun Martin, you've been sitting there.
I'd share, build and share. That was the last
build
part.
Build and share.
Like, don't just sit it and build and, you know, in your closet in your house, don't share it with anyone. Build and share.
Yeah. Or as we say, pay it forward on this podcast. Share it. Yeah. Absolutely.
So my question kind of leads on from that quite nicely, actually. Bit of a follow-up to what Dale said around changing sectors as a scheduler, because obviously the fundamentals of planning are the same no matter where you go. The tool sets, broadly speaking, are the same. Most people are going to be using your Primavera P6, Microsoft Project, whatever. But I'm guessing people might get put off by a new sector because they might not be able to command the same salary. You know, if we just say a guy going from oil and gas into rail, it's going to be quite hard. In your experience, how long does it take to learn a new industry? So you go in there, you start a new job. How long is it taking you to really master it, and how long are you kind of getting by just by having the solid fundamentals and good mentors experience in your experience?
It depends on the sector jump that you're going from. But so for one, most sector jumps, I don't see people going parallel or going down when they jump. Most people, when they sector jump, still get the pay raise or pay bump from salary compression. You know, so that's the one of the first things that I would say to me. So I jumped from tearing down nuclear facilities to building large scale ferry boats that cars drive on to building data centers. Okay. So
pretty different.
Apple, orange, monkey, right? All three different. And there's the, to me, getting the job is, did you do the research on the industry to be able to talk about how they're built? And that's the beauty of the world we're living in today. You can literally go on the internet, and for any industry, there's going to be loads of YouTube comments, websites, and everything else that will literally explain to you how these things are built. Well enough that you can step into an interview, and if someone's like, well, hey, how do you put together a large, you know, LNG facility? You should be able to talk through it. Now, you might not know the very specifics, and you mentioned the word mastery. You might not be at that level, but they're most likely not hiring you for that. Because going back to our early conversations, there's just so much demand for planners and schedulers that most people, if they're like, hey, you know P6, that's great. You know planning and scheduling, that's great. You're a great communicator, you're a great presenter. And when you interviewed, you actually went and did the research and mostly know how the stuff's put together. Cool. We'll go show you the finer points of this, and because we know you're going to excel. When you're switching, I think that's one of the key things to look at or think about when jumping in between industries. But I mean, people jump all over the place all the time. And I think a lot of people just have this glass wall in front of them where they're sitting in their job. They worked at the same company for 7 or 8 years. I can't leave rail because no one will hire me. I only know rail. And you just kick that glass down, shatter it. Get that resume together, go research an industry, network a little bit, and go find yourself a new job.
Do you think there's any geographic or cultural elements with that? Do you think there are certain, you know, maybe it's easier to do that in America than, say, Australia? Maybe I'll bring in Val and Dale for their experiences after. But do you think there's any kind of, do you think it's easier to jump in certain regions, cultures, than it is in others?
Yeah, I'm a little biased. I've only lived in America, but I've built all over the world, managed projects all over the world, worked for global companies. And to me, I think it comes down to the person. Like, are you willing to actually move? Do you want to go live in Sydney? I mean, I think that's more of the question. We talked a lot about poisonous animals and bugs before the show started. Oh, so when I said, do you want to go live in Sydney? Everyone shook their head no. And I'm like,
come on down a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. We're ready.
Yeah. So, I mean, Dale definitely would open to your opinion on this, but my short answer is no. There's some friction there, right? There's some work there. Getting a new job isn't easy. You don't just apply to the first place and they hire you. You're going to have to apply to multiple places, and there's a struggle to it, but it's the same struggle that almost exists anywhere with anything. So I'm not saying it's anything new, you know, it's just the friction of going and doing it.
Val, you've been around the proverbial block. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I think it's necessary. I think it's necessary now to switch. I think it used to be before, you know, you'd be 40 years in the same sector, kind of, you know, you start off on the site and then you work through the tools. And I think that whole model of staying in the same job is just completely dead, particularly for the younger generation. And there's a few challenges to that. One of them is a lot of the projects are subsidized or incentivized by government, and government spends money and then stops spending money. They do it all the time. They start a project and like, uh-oh, time out. We've run out of money. Transport is stopped. So in Australia at the moment, we're literally going through this because before they started all the construction projects, everyone said, you can't have all the construction projects for transport starting at the same time. They still did it anyway. And then we went through it, and lo and behold, some of those projects were over budget and we ran out of money. So then they've pulled back the capital spend on infrastructure projects in the transport. And all these planners and various other roles have gone, uh-oh, what do we do? So I think it's a good thing now to be all-rounded in a few sectors and to be brave enough. As Michael said, it's going to be hard. Wherever you go and you're learning a new thing, all right, you're going to have to put in the effort and put in the hours. It's not going to be 9 to 5 when you start a new job. You're going to have to, especially if you want to be good at it, you want to immerse yourself as much as possible into the context, into the subject matter, into the scope, into the contracts. But I think there is an avenue for planners to be, you know, multitaceted. So they could be really good in, you know, rail, but they could definitely transfer over to road and other civil projects that that are kind of linear based. Or if they're doing software projects, they could easily go into infrastructure for data and technology. So there's a lot of adjacent fields anyway within those sectors. But I do think it's also worth thinking about job protection and prosperity, right? So, you know, keeping your eyes not just on the role in front of you, but the potential roles you might be heading. And a lot of guys I see, even Justin Dale, who you know quite well, who used to work with us, you know, he went on to the Melbourne Airport Rail project. And I said, I don't know if that's a good idea. He's like, nah, it's fine. Shout out to Justin. Good planner. Excellent planner. And they stopped that project. And then I get a call back from Justin. He's like, hey, Val, shit, I've got to find another job now. So, you know, he's fine now, by the way, guys. But it's just making sure that you do have a career path.
He didn't get eaten by a giant kangaroo.
He's more Australian than me.
I didn't know where the story was going. I was getting nervous with the animals we were talking about. I'm like, Justin, are you okay?
Yeah, man. I was worried about him for a little bit, but he's back at TELUS, so shout out to TELUS too. So I think having an understanding of the market you're in, but then feel free to jump around. I think that's I used to get in trouble for this, Micah, for my CV, because I've been in a few industries. And it was when you weren't really meant to do that, they're like, so why are you going from renewables to oil and gas, Val? I'm like, I was bored. I don't know. What do you say to that? You know, like,
I like to party.
Yeah. 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 There's too many snakes over here. I want to go over there. So I think my advice, Martin, would be that, you should definitely get some cross-sector experience. And that's definitely attractive in this market in Australia.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Yeah, it's ultimately about how much time and effort you put into it as well, and really learning that trade and just keeping on top of your own personal development. So that's really interesting insight there. I've got one more. If we go back to the kind of the art of scheduling, something I'm interested in based on when we had Lawrence Rowland on a couple of weeks ago. So one of the planning interview questions I heard once was, what percentage of your week would a good scheduler spend in a planning software to compare to everything else, the informal chats, analysis, going out on site? At the moment, what's your take on that, Micah? And then if I say in the future, where do you think this is going to go with some of the advances in technology and AI? When we had Lawrence on, he was saying, you know, things like GPTs are really going to change how we interact with each other on a project. It's, you know, going to be obviously more technological based, maybe less, arguably less speaking to each other, and emphasis on the word arguably there. So where do you see the kind of current role of a planner at the moment, what you're doing day to day, and how do you think that's going to change, say, in 5-10 years?
I would say most people who are planning and scheduling should try and spend as little time as possible in their planning and scheduling software. As little time as possible. And the reason why I say that is because your value is typically, you'll create your output or some of your outputs out of your scheduling planning software, but the most value you will create will not be in the planning and scheduling software. You know, so there's a delay on your project. Great. You grab the progress, you enter in the system. Maybe you do your analysis in Primavera P6 or your planning and scheduling software, but then you have to take that delay and communicate it now. So the value that I see as the planner and scheduler is, number one, maybe using some more sophisticated tools to go along Primavera P6 to help analyze that delay. So boom, I'm out of the software. Number two, now I'm going to go get out in the field and check to see what is really going on with that delay and get the superintendents and boots on the ground type interaction with it. Still not in the software. I'm going to go create a presentation that says, listen, this is the impact we've had. This is the mitigations we can possibly go execute. And this is how we should go do it. Still not in the software. I'm going to go talk to my teammates, the cost engineer, the project manager, everybody else. Okay. Get them on board with it. So we go sit in that meeting, still not in the software. And then I'm going to go present that. And then if I get the agreement, sure, I'll come back and maybe go in, you know, enter it in the software. So to me, you know, to as little as possible, try and be in the software as little as possible would be a good rule of thumb. And when we start looking out, you mentioned in the future, I think it's actually going to, I'm different. I think it's actually going to bring people together, to be honest with you. I think a lot of stuff that isolates people right now is the rudimentary manual tasks. So being in Primavera P6 isolates you from your team. If I am working with Val's favorite color skew, the team,
not yellow,
there, whatever. I mean, whatever project software he's using, it doesn't really matter. But if I'm in those, am I talking with my teammates? Are we talking about stuff that humans should be talking about? No, I'm just, this is 10%. This is 15%. I need to move this. Okay. I hit F9. I look at the critical path. Oh, let me check the resource loading balancing. Zero interaction. Flash forward, I don't know, 5-10 years. And we're using visual based progressing and we have automated workflows for non-visual based stuff. So maybe I'll just clarify what I'm talking about there so people don't think I'm a psychopath. Visual-based progressing, so we're using the cameras, we're capturing progress that way, and that's actually feeding back our percent completes, okay? Non-visual-based stuff is design completion, contracts, and stuff we cannot physically see or that the computer can't work out. So that's underground trench work, pulling cable, blah, 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 right? I have all of that, and I'm getting my progress entered into the system. Okay. Now you might say at that point, well, what's the point of the planners and schedulers job at that point? I'm like, well, now that you have all that data, your ability to do analysis is just off the charts at that point. I mean, you have a data set there that is like, you just brought Superman to the party and it's competing against, you know, like just regular old people. I mean, you just have this crazy amount of data that you can go analyze. And so that's where you need the human beings. And then no one's putting stuff into machines anymore. So I have this, I could go sit down with Val and, hey Val, you know, progress just came in, our robot dogs ran the site and our automated stuff brought it in. You know, we're looking at a, you know, delay on the steel structure in zone A. The computer has brought in these mitigations. Maybe you're the supply chain manager. Do you think we should expedite steel? Or what are you seeing on your end from your, you know, capabilities, you know? And so I think it's going to bring more human interaction. I think it's really hard for me to say that we'll get to like a fully autonomous state. I think that's a bit of a pipe dream, you know, for a little bit where, oh, well, I wouldn't even need Val. That would just go over to Val's chat box and Val's chat box would answer me. I'm like, I don't know. That's kind of getting a little Jetsons a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
But I think in the short term, I think it's actually going to probably improve collaboration with people on site and increase that human interaction.
Yeah, I think you're bang on there, Micah. And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I've seen some amazing things, but it comes back to what I think will be the kind of the mediary. Because if you look at art, okay, and we talk about the subtle art, but art's a very visual experience, right? And I think with all this great technology entering the planning market, I think we're going to have a medium that everyone can understand. And that's always been a challenge.
Yeah.
For projects, when the planner doesn't understand the project manager doesn't understand what the project director wants, and the cost guys are just pissing everybody off, you know, the finance team. when that happens, because you know it happens a lot, you end up just, you know, and there's politics on top of that. But when you're objectively looking at a site, and you know the drone has done the scan, or the robots have gone out and done a marker. And you're looking back and you're saying, okay, well, this is the data. And I've seen some great project software come out lately. And a lot of it's kind of geo-mapped. It's visual. It's land boundaries. It's overlaying design. Like, you can't argue with that. This is what it is. And so that there's a very limited, I guess, force of resistance against that. And then if you apply the planning principles over the top of that, you're all speaking the same language. You might take that away and put it back into the planning box. And someone might take that away and put it in the cost box. But I actually think, as you said, the skill set will rise, and I think communication will be far more productive on site and in the office as well, because we'll be speaking from one plan. And that's always been a bit of a pipe dream. I always thought that we'd never get there. But because of technology, I think we'll be able to leapfrog over a few of these hurdles and get to a point where I think Dale and I have said it with Dan Patterson and Infuse, you know, almost like this blank canvas. And I've seen some great ones. Where you can take an engineering drawing and it can suck it up. I'll say it for now, just to be agnostic, but it'll suck it up and produce a schedule based on your drawings and what it should look like roughly, right? And you get these kind of templates and frameworks set up, and then the tailoring starts. But I think that's an exciting prospect just for a role, right? Imagine being in that job where everything kind of gets ready and then your job is really to be the tailor, right? The head chef, the sous chef, you're there to support the facilitation of the communication of that to make sure we can hit those targets. It might not stop the politics though, to be fair. But
let's not get into that. Yeah. That's not going to stop it. But I love that what you said. It's the integration. It's going to integrate other functions easier because, and I may be putting words in your mouth, you quickly jump over all of the data aggregation. I'm pulling this information, and you quickly just jump that hurdle into, let's start working solutions. You know, problems defined much quicker, and we can now use our collective brains to focus what humans are great at: solutions, unique, interesting solutions. You know, AI robot's going to tell anybody to go to the moon. You know, like us as humans are going to decide to go to the moon. And so that's where I feel like, to me, that's where it's pointing, you know, to like, let's getting to that point, getting to solutions. And I love the visual part too. I mean, who really wants to look at a pastel 80s Gantt chart? And then my favorite one all time is being a planner or scheduler, and planner or schedulers will relate to this. Hey, can you send me the schedule? And the person's like, yeah, sure. And then they send you the schedule on 8.5 by 11 paper. And it's like 6,000 pages, and the PDF is like 3 gigs. And I'm like, what about, just the XCR? And they're like, oh, yeah, you wanted the XCR? Oh, okay, yeah.
that's a great – I'm going to flip that back on you, Mark. That is a great question. So what if someone else does ask you and you're not being, you know, facetious and you don't send them 80 pages, but what do you send? How do you do that today rather than thinking about the future? How do you do that today? I want a picture of the plan. How do you send that without confusing people?
Well, Val, what role do you have at this company?
I'm probably a shit kicker somewhere, you know, project controller, assistant project controller, assistant to the assistant of the project controls. I don't know. could be anyone, but if I'm asking for it, probably
so
I've got
a you're a project control. So let's say you're doing project controls and you're overseeing the dry mechanical. Okay,
sure.
Well, that's interesting. Dry mechanical of what zone? Okay, zones A, A, 3, and C. Cool. Do you want, what are you looking for? What reasons for it? Oh, I'm trying to match my cash flow up to the schedule projections. Okay, cool. So you're going to probably need some detailed activities and see it laid out over time, you know, and what kind of cash flow you focused on from a certain period or till the end of the project. Okay, till the end of the project. Cool. I would then probably go into Primavera. I'd filter it down to that scope. I would give you an Excel dropout of the activities and the range. And then you would be able to plug that into your little project control model and go off and do your thing. When someone asks to see the schedule, there's probably a 0% chance they actually want to see the schedule.
100%.
It's like, you know what, let's talk about what you need. And I've always viewed project controls as a client-based service. Like I am a I'm working for clients. It's a service-based type, you know, operation. And so I'm trying to figure out what the person really needs. And people aren't really great at asking for it. You know, they're not going to understand fully. I get all the time, like, what are the critical dates on this project? And I'm like, well, why do you want to know? And then it's, also you can build some relationship with the people and understand exactly what they need. And the other thing you always want to ask in those situations is, hey, Val, are you going to need this on a regular basis? And when you say the word yes, I'm going to go, okay, cool. Cause I'm going to immediately operationalize how I'm going to get you the data. Because that first poll took me some time and I'm going to make sure that it's going to take me no time. And then if it's a big enough need and I'm like, I'm working with Val, Dale, and Martin, they're all project controllers. They're all getting cash flow. Well, shoot, why don't we figure out a way to make it so you can pull this data yourself and maybe it pulls into a system and maybe we integrate our systems and you go into the project director and you're like, hey, program director, me, Val, Martin, and Dale all got together. And we just automated cash flow, saved a ton of time, saved a ton of money, and now we have more accurate cash flow. You know, so that's the framework that I would go through. I don't know about other people as they go through it. Actually, that's actually what ChatGPT just told me. I don't know if I've told you. I'm running this conversation live, and I have a screen over here, and it's giving me cues and notes.
You'll have to share screen. It was an interview version of ChatGPT. I don't know. And I saw it. Have you seen this one, Micah? And they had it running in the background while they're being interviewed. And the chat equivalent was just coming up with prompts and answers. And so this guy who was going for jobs that he wasn't qualified for was absolutely killing these interviews. He was killing them. So, yeah, interviews are going to be interesting from now on, I think, from the future. But, Dale, what do you think? What's your views, mate?
Oh, I have lots of views. Which ones? I think on the last bit, interviews should be face-to-face maybe without a computer screen. Maybe that'll help. I think we need more face-to-face interaction in general. Enough of the screens, although I'm probably being a bit hypocritical here. We're all on technology. But I wanted to dial back into the tech space, the future space, Micah, with you, because It's interesting to understand that most things, most benefits have a cost. And so if technology is benefiting us in terms of doing all the grunt work and the legwork, and there's no formal training today in terms of, you know, university degrees and such that can help standardize and give an in-depth understanding of different project planning techniques, and most of the experience and best planners gain their expertise through experience, different sectors, different types of projects, different, you know, contractual natures, whatever the case might be. Do we then get planners in the future that understand less about planning? And if so, does it actually really matter if they understand less, if the computer is doing everything and actually that's okay and they only need to know what to do with the outputs? What's your view?
Probably another radical one, maybe. I think they'll actually understand more.
Okay.
So you have to compare with what it is today. Everything you learn today, planning and scheduling, is, word of mouth. It's the company's knowledge set, the guy or gal you're sitting next to. if you take an example of, we just had 30, 40 projects, those 30, 40 projects use visual based progressing. So it's not a garbage in, garbage out scenario. You know, down to a very fine component, how these projects were built. You could then build trainings, very specific trainings, on how to build one of these projects. To me, that's, and then people can actually search, chat, ask questions about these projects like they never could before. You know how many companies I've stepped into that provide you a great training on the thing you're about to go build? Very few. Very, yeah. Very few. So to me, that's going to uplift potentially, you know, the skill set of the people as they come in the door, because you're going to use that very same technology that you're saying, hey, I've got a better prediction now based on this data set. You can use that to create training data to help people out. Like you said, there's always a cost. I can't think of one right now. I'm really struggling. And I'm sure there are, and I'm probably just overly optimistic about, hey, Skynet's going to come. Well, at least my project gets delivered on time for a couple of years before we need Sarah Connor. But I don't know. I think it's going to help in that regard.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, as you say, we actually really don't know what the cost might be. Maybe there's only benefit, but maybe, as you say, we're just fooling ourselves. Maybe, I don't know, but we're very optimistic about the tech. I think, and we'll repeat it again, you know, with the future scaping, I guess it's more about treading curiously, but cautiously as well as you go. So that's really,
there's
really
lots of examples in the past where tech got introduced, people think it's going to kill jobs, and then it creates a whole new industry.
Yeah.
And lots of people that are in the industry are able to transfer over to the new industry.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you were driving a taxi cab, you could probably drive an Uber, you know, and there's not enough autonomous cars out there that's like taking both of their jobs. I know that's just kind of I know that's like a high level, but I look at it the same way. I mean, I really think that these tools, are going to elevate the profession and really help people out. And if people take a broader view of them, and it's going back to the create, I would have never been able to come on this podcast and tell you, hey, if you had a large data set of projects, why couldn't you use it to help build your training program to explain in better detail to your project planners and schedulers how they're built? Until I started screwing around, I'm like, wow, you could actually probably do that, you know? And so to me, like getting out there, getting your hands dirty, experiencing these tools is, it's powerful and it's going to help you out. Now, definitely cover the foundations, definitely understand the basics, you know, but I mean, like your taxes, like TurboTax, no one's filling their taxes out on a piece of paper anymore. Well, in America, I don't know. And I don't know if people pay taxes elsewhere, but in America, well, you just enter into TurboTax, you know what I mean? And it takes care of the rest of it. No one's like, I wonder what the 1036B code law is. And it works, you know? And so, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I'm excited for the future, you know, and I'm excited for seeing some of this tech really start to bloom and people get their hands on it and the cost of it to start to drop and, you know, more competitors flood into the market. Cause that's just going to be better for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. And as you say, there's so many places we can go with the future of project planning. And we'll get you back maybe next year for a follow-up to see what's happened in a year's time. But look, we've done Fiverr with you before, so we won't go there again because I think we've put you through your paces. But it's been fantastic to actually just kick the tires with you on all sorts.
Absolutely.
And we will let you go.
It's been a while since I talk this long. Usually our podcasts are so short. Like.
Yeah, so it's great that you're able to share with us all of your experiences, because I think it's good to hear perspective of where we are with planning and scheduling as well. And before we let you go though, you're not quite done yet. Just hang on. Oh, we want to hear your final thoughts that you want to leave our listeners with.
Well, if you can go check out Beyond Deadlines, we have a podcast. It's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. We're on YouTube. Check out the Beyond Deadlines newsletters. We offer one that deep dives more into different sorts of tactics, and another one that's just a weekly email that I mentioned before. It provides some of those high level tactics, but it also provides three jobs every week that you can go look at to see how the market's changing and moving and opportunities. And then for anybody out there who's considering, you know, switching careers or interested in planning to scheduling, you know, come get in contact with us and let's explore what opportunities exist for you. And overall, like, go create, go find a tool, find something you understand, find a problem you want to solve and go try and solve it. Don't let your company hold you back. Don't let anything hold you back. Go figure it out.
Absolutely. Go and figure it out. Val, any final thoughts from you?
No, that was great. It's good to see that the planning profession is still alive and there's someone at least excited about it. I think that's what we need in the market. We need someone energetic.
It's one person.
One. But you start with one.
There are dozens of us.
That's how cults start these days. It's just one. I mean, you've got this TikTok, whatever else is out there, you can amplify your message. But it's great you are doing that with Greg. We are humble supporters of what you guys are doing and happy to be part of that too. So do check out Beyond Deadlines as well, guys. And thanks for your time, Micah.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been absolutely awesome. It's been a privilege and a pleasure to have you back on the Project Chatter podcast. There you have it, folks. This is the end of this episode, but please do help us pay it forward by sharing a link to this episode on your favorite social media. Once again, a massive thank you to our guest on this episode, Micah Pieper. And thank you all for listening. Till next time, we say stay safe, be disruptive, and have fun doing it. From me, Val, and Martin, it's bye for now.
Project Chatter supports and is a member of Zero Construct. Zero Construct is a new working group that wants to lower carbon construction. Not everyone will be aware, but construction contributes to around 12 to 15% of total carbon emissions.
This is a staggering amount, and we need to reduce it. We are a growing community of people that want to help make this change. Everyone is welcome, whether you're an engineer, contractor, or consultant. You just need to want to make a difference.
Our aim is to grow a network of experts so we can all learn from each other and make a positive impact in the places where we work. We'll do this by sharing knowledge and making it accessible in engaging ways.
To join us and find out more, please visit zeroconstruct.com and register as a member. Thank you, and we look forward to speaking with you soon.
For more information, blogs, or to support our charities, visit projectchatterpodcast.com. And if you would like to sponsor the podcast, get in touch via our website.
You can also leave us a voice message via our anchor page and let us know if there's something or someone specific that you would like on the podcast.
Views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this podcast belong solely to the participating individuals and not necessarily to the individual's employer, organization, committee, or other group or individual. Additionally, any views or opinions are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, or individual.